Well, hello everyone. I am back once again with Todd Lewis, who has been outlining some of his more, dare I say, out there ideas for reimagining how the world order might look, how the economy might look, along very different lines from those that we're used to. Before we get going, where can people find you, Todd Lewis?
Yeah, you can find me at POF Podcast on X, and you can type Praiseify Podcast into YouTube search engine and find me there.
And I'll just remind people, do pick up course at the Academic Agency. There's also Eric Kaufman's new course at the University of Buckingham, which I'll, as I've been doing, play the ad at the end. But without further ado, the third in our little trilogy here of Todd's new order, we might put it this way, or at least his kind of sketch of what a new order might look like. This one has got quite a long title: The Unsteady Soul as the Source of War, The X Factor as a Point of Failure. What does all this mean?
Right. So as we've established in the previous two episodes, lots of people are going to say, well, this is assuming people are better than they are, or it's naive and trusting people. Obviously, there was a type like that, absolutely. And then the X factor. Well, in Clausewitz on War, he says that, look, you can talk about all sorts of inputs into the battle, but what you can't measure is the human will to keep fighting. That's what he calls the X factor. And so for him, you want to manage as much of that as possible, but knowing that this variable will always remain. It's just that, you know, but let's put this in perspective, right? You might be a super fanatical Japanese warrior, but the United States brought enough force to bear at Iwo Jima that it didn't matter. You were still going to die. You were still going to get taken out. Or, but flip it around, the power of the will, the Taliban outlasted the United States for 20 years in Afghanistan. So all the material forces in the world didn't break the will or beat the Taliban. So again, this is a very interesting concept. That's the point of failure that to all of these ideas that everybody talks about. Now, we can also rope this in with Machiavelli, the idea that, you know, you have to hedge against fortune. Fortune is this chaotic principle in the world, whether it's your individual life or the life of a nation. And so all of the things that I've been proposing up to this point have been an attempt to hedge and plan against this X factor by taking it out of the equation as much as possible, because that's the point of failure. Now then, how is this the source of conflict and so on and so on? Well, J.F.C. Fuller, at the end of his History of the Second World War, cites James from the Book of James saying that one's desire to lust and have is what causes wars, which is very interesting. J.F.C. Fuller was also a occultist at one point, so we're getting really esoteric with this guy, and the father of modern armored warfare, inventing tank strategy in World War I. So what he's saying is that is a very important principle, that conflict isn't ultimately over resources, though it is manifested and occurs in a space dominated by resources because we have to consume energy to survive. But it doesn't start there. It starts in us. That's the X factor. That's why it's so hard to account for what people might or might not do or should not do. And part of the problem is, even though we have had adepts throughout history, they're very few, because ultimately it takes a lot of effort to get to that point. And oftentimes most people just don't have the option to do that or can't do that for whatever reason. And this is where Sir Francis Bacon comes in and his New Atlantis. And the idea being that the production of adepts will become an industrial process. And the idea is, well, isn't that out there? Well, yeah, but let's think about it this way. Let's imagine what the right loves to talk about, right? Let's imagine a society in which every man and woman in the country was required to go through mandatory physical training to be an athlete. Okay, we could point to Sparta, okay? That's a historical example. We could point to mid-20th century Germans. It's another example. It doesn't currently exist, but we all kind of intuitively know that it could. And we all kind of intuitively know that if it did, we'd all be happier and healthier and things would work better. Right, but let's go one little step further. Let's say we had a society that was not only engineered to do that, but engineered to remove all of the impediments that allow a man to complete the hermetic work. If all of those were removed by controlling for these external material causes through the ways that I've described, we could now actually begin to do the most important thing, which is finish the great work, which is what Bacon's goal was, and where science has really gone off the rails.
Now, Todd, as I've been doing throughout these interviews, I will come up with the best counters I can think of. Aren't you basically reproducing the conditions or the sorts of thinking that bring about things like the Matrix? Right? In the Matrix, if you remember those movies, you've seen the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
The computer system, I forget what it's called now, figures out that the point of failure is humans, right? Humans are the problem over and over again. And so they try to engineer humans out of the system by putting them into vats, right? Literally vats, to live their lives in a simulation, in a simulation, as the actual real world is taken over by robot overlords. It's not just the Matrix. This is the plot of like dozens, hundreds of sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi narratives. And it's always been the great kind of nightmare fear of the human being, that if you go the route of efficiency, if you go the route of creating things like artificial intelligence, it's only a matter of time before. I mean, it's literally the plot of Terminator, is it not? This is Skynet. So, like, I mean, this is obviously the number one thing anybody's going to say. Aren't you reproducing Skynet or the Matrix?
Right. So, one, no. Two, this process isn't built upon the idea of a controlling AI. I mean, AI tools, I would assume, would be integrated into this broader process. But it's not that I'm envisioning this nation would then subordinate all of its decision-making to this artificial intelligence. I'm saying that what we would do is use the... So the Marxists speak about liberating the forces of production. To what end, right? Well, I'm saying that the end that was envisioned by Bacon was that once you liberate the forces of production, you could then basically have everybody become, you know, hermetic adepts. That was the goal. And so, because ultimately, you know, the historical accounts that he was aware of himself, of men that achieved that level, they had to basically cut themselves off from society and spend decades of their lives doing this. And so it just wasn't feasible for most people. And furthermore, it was, even at that time, a process of clumsy learning, like it was for most everything else. So what I'm saying is that we look at, here's a good example. Philosophy Cat did a series of videos summarizing the work of Evola. In one of the episodes, she was talking about how Evola's conception of God. And Evola's conception of God was that he was an the axis of that you rotate around, and that spirituality was you, the person, rotating close, you know, your orbit was getting smaller and smaller as you rotated around the axis of God, so that you became one with God. At least that's how I took the video she put together. What I'm talking about is when you look at the understanding of these physical laws that govern human action, they have to exist before humans can act. You start intentionally acting in accordance with those principles. And in that regard, it is analogous to this Evolian view of God, where you just keep orbiting around these principles so the orbit gets smaller and smaller and smaller, such that you can achieve the desired result that you want. Now, in this case, it's material, it's physical sciences, but then for what purpose? Well, when you look at people who do self-examination and want to do better and make their failed New Year's resolutions, there's always all sorts of things that just come up, in part because we're living in a society that's designed so that you really can't do this. Like, that's the last thing, you know, Madison Avenue wants you to do. Then you wouldn't be mindlessly buying all their slop. So we've created a system in which that's not possible. Now, we know this, right? Because let's imagine the more, you know, vitalist perspective. What if we had a state that encouraged everybody to eat healthy and work out? We'd have a nation of athletes. You would. I mean, that would just happen, but we don't have the political will to make that happen. And what I'm saying is that, well, if you just expand your imagination just a little bit more and build on top of that, you could also have a society that's fully integrated for the purposes of not only A, removing all the physical impediments to becoming an adept, but then also giving these people the tools necessary to implement in their own lives to do so.
I mean, one of the problems I think that you may run into here, there's several, how can I put this? I mean, not everybody wants to be a hermetic adept, Todd. Lots of people want to watch a football and watch their Netflix and whack off to porn and, you know, or grill or, you know, enjoy life. I don't know. They don't want to be a hermetic adept. So that would be the first objection. How do you respond to that first and foremost?
Well, you know, let's look at what Chomsky tells us about manufacturing consent, right? We're born in a system where these Madison Avenue guys are doing all sorts of things to us, or that famous Adbusters cartoon, or not cartoon, commercial, where it says if it's free, you're the product, and it has a guy with a barcode on the back of his neck. All of these kinds of behavioral knee-jerk reactions that like libertarians and normie conservatives have are all programmed responses that are from this mechanism. We are living in an embedded market system that is programming us to behave this way. And so what I'm saying is, if you take them out of that, granted, if you're a boomer, you might take a very long time, if ever, to unprogram yourself, because depending on how long the program is running, that's going to be harder to unprogram. But we already do this all the time. Let's look at when Bush invaded Iraq in 2003. Most people in the United States didn't want him to do it, but it turns out that he didn't have to listen to them. And so because the system was so constructed that him sitting at the top of it could act in this unilateral way, and even the whole world just had to sit by and watch. And so what I'm saying is, you know, whoever, if such a system is constructed, whoever sits at the top of that system, it doesn't really matter what that person thinks below, because they are so irrelevant to the working of the system that their protests would be as meaningless as protesting Bush's invasion of Iraq.
So this brings me to the other thing I wanted to say, which is that if you read Evola, he says, well, look, you know, the path of the initiate or the path of the adept is not for everybody. It is only for the differentiated man. And I used to give a lecture on Francis Bacon's New Atlantis, and I seem to remember that even within that system, not everybody is an adept. I mean, there are slaves in there. He actually reproduces slavery, and people as punishments have to kind of toil, right? Because they've strayed from the path and all this sort of stuff. So how do you deal with this element of the kind of explicit elitism of some of these ideas?
Well, are you sure you're not mistaking it for utopia? In Thomas More's Utopia, slavery is a punishment for theft.
Oh, maybe I am. Maybe. See, the funny thing is, I used to give a course, and I did Thomas More's Utopia, then Bacon, and then I did the next one. Yes, maybe you're right. Maybe it was Thomas More. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm misremembering things.
But it's to the broader point.
Yeah.
So what I'm not saying is that everybody will become, you know, Hermes Trismegistus. That's not going to happen. But what I am saying is, if we look at the human person today from the vantage point of someone who has that ascended perspective, everybody's living radically suboptimally. I mean, that's pretty obvious. So the goal then would be to remove all... See, so in Hermeticism and philosophy, the Philosopher's Stone is turning the lead in your soul into gold. Now, that doesn't mean everybody's the same. You could still have a prince and a peasant, both who have gold souls, but still the peasant's a peasant. I mean, that's the hobbits, right, from the Lord of the Rings. And Aragorn is the aristocrat here. You're not necessarily, and it's not required, you know, radically altering the system of class. That might happen. It's just not necessary. But what you are doing is everybody has lead in their souls, and this system removes that, creates the conditions under which most people, if not all people, can do that. Now, let me step back. we don't have hunger anymore, really, as a crisis in the modern developed West, because we've been so overabundant in the production of food that starvation just isn't really a thing. And we've engineered society to be that way. Well, what if we engineered society so that we just didn't have people with lead souls anymore? Because we'd already done everything required to ensure that they have gold souls. I don't see why that's not possible if we already look back and see the accomplishments we've had with, say, the production of food.
In this hypothetical society, would there be NFL?
That probably not, but that depends. Because one of the things with, say, these sort of sporting events or simulated events, I'm very big on the idea of simulations and gaming as a part of education, because what's a game? A game is a simulation. And of course, you know, governments war game all the time. So, you know, if top brass in the military play games, it probably does something, right? So it teaches you how to think in a specific context to achieve a specific goal. So currently football is not meant to do that. Football is meant to just, you know, entertain and distract. But does it have to be? No. And I think you could envision a football league, I guess, where instead of this sort of like, you know, putting you back to sleep and, you know, don't protest that your government's doing all these terrible things, it's integrated into this broader system. I think you could. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. What else? How would something like this even come about in the first place from where we are now? I know that's quite a big question.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Yeah.
No, that's fine. It's a good one. So what I would say is probably the biggest thing, and this is where I am going to sound like a 90s new atheist. We really don't have scientific literacy in this country. We have all sorts of social expectations that are completely at odds with biological reality. Let's just do the most obvious. Women have periods, women get pregnant, and women nurse children. But yet somehow we built a social system in which we pretend all of that doesn't happen. That's right there a very unscientific, irrational thing to do. Now, it does serve the interests of certain financial interests who can cut the cost of wages doing this, but it's ultimately insane. It's not scientific at all. And so that leads to false expectations. That leads to false assumptions. That leads to people who do things that then don't get what they want out of life, and they left scratching their head, what happened? Well, what happened was you were sold a bill of goods is what happened. And so what I'm saying is with science and education and broader education is it's not practical, right? So the schools of philosophy like Aristotle and Plato, they were giving you a way to live your life. It wasn't just some abstract theory. It was a way to live your life. And we don't have that either. And so there's scientific knowledge that's just floating around that's either not being directly communicated correctly to the students, or they are not being told how to use it practically in a way that is meaningful and tangible in their own lives and the lives of the people around them. So by doing all of this as a sort of like meta-educational concept, we can envision getting people to think in these terms. Now, I would agree with the vitalists, actually, that a big first step is to clean up our food supply and make everybody healthy. I think that sort of, in fact, that's part of the Hermetic principle, a healthy body leads to a healthy mind. So if we get to wherever they're at, and let's say we got the vitalist America now, right? There's no more seed oils. Everybody gets their sun. Everybody lifts weights. Well, then the next step beyond vitalist America would be if you then had people both in the East and in the West, you know, with the Buddhists and the Catholics, you have monasteries. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to become a monk or anything like that, but what the monastery represents is this space which is supported by, in these cases, organized religions, where men and women can reflect and meditate and do all these spiritual activities. And, you know, we've talked before about how space is weaponized. If you don't have the space to do a thing, you don't do the thing. We see this all the time. There's no, if you don't have a third places in your town, hard to meet up and socialize. Sucks to be you. So we would start building places in which people could start actively disciplining themselves. In a way, everybody's rigorous as going to the gym, but it would be like a gym for your soul, right? And that would be like what you could do after we get to Vitalist America. And then you get this compounding effect where more and more people do this. And then what you expect human behavior to be begins to radically alter.
See, I wonder, I do wonder about that. I wonder, like, if some of the issues that we've had, you know, with our current society wouldn't start to reproduce themselves. For example, let's say you've got your, enlightened, adept adjacent NFL, right? Your new enlightened football league. Won't there be some percentage, like, let's say, of women who say, well, okay, I want to do that. It's unfair. I want to do that. I want to be the NFL star. Or I don't, you understand what I mean? Like, I'm just talking about the scope of what we call liberalism or individualist liberalism reproducing itself within these structures that you're setting up. Like, how do you stop it? Or how do you prevent it taking purchase in this hypothetical future society?
We're talking about dealing with this thing at the root. So if we go back to the assessment of J.S.C. Fuller, favorably citing James, that there's something deep inside of you that is what's causing this, the question then becomes, can you fix it or not? Now, let's make it more, let's reify this. Let's look at a body, right? We have a body that is sick or injured or whatever. We all intuitively know that, yeah, if we treat that and we get healthy, you know, we go the vitalist route, all of those things that were bothering us go away, right? It's not only that we manage them better, they just go away because we remove the conditions that allowed for these pathologies in our lives in the first place. They're gone. And so now we can do whatever we wanted to do because we've, you know, embraced vitalism, right? And we all sort of get that. And unless somebody, you know, actively engages in unhealthy behavior all over again, that's not going to happen. And what I'm arguing is that for those people that can accomplish the great work, that actually do accomplish it, you aren't going to regress because you've produced this finished product, which is incapable of regressing. The problem is it's so dang hard to create it. Only a tiny handful of adepts over all of human history have ever been able to do this. And so the point is, what would happen though, if you had that as the goal for the liberation of the productive forces that the Marxists talk about, and then you did it to everybody in the country? We wouldn't. I don't know how long it would take. I don't know. You know, I'm not saying it would happen tomorrow or whatever. But you get to a point where regression is impossible. We could also look at like René Girard, where he talks about as human consciousness grows, earlier forms of human social organization just become unfeasible, right? So the sort of like human sacrifice practices of the Aztecs, the Canaanites, for example, as he brings up, you can't really envision humanity going back to that. Everybody would just be up in arms, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, wasteland America with rat roaches, and you got some cult going to do human sacrifice like the Aztecs. I guarantee you everybody's going to shut that down. They're just not going to tolerate it anymore because we've progressed beyond a certain point. And so in the life of an individual who can achieve that level of turning their lead in their soul to gold, they're just not going to regress. Now, the question then is, how many people can you actually do that to? Open question, but that's what we're here to find out.
For some reason, my mind turns, you know, there's that celebrity chef, Jamie Oliver, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. A few years ago, this celebrity chef, Jamie Oliver, was like, look, the food that kids are eating is really unhealthy, okay? So he launched this nationwide campaign to try to make kids' food healthy, right? So in the schools, rather than giving them slop and chips and burgers and so on and so forth and fast food, and he was like, he made up healthy menus, right? Vegetables and things like that, fresh food for them to have. And there was this documentary made, and in the documentary, it was shown on Channel 4, I think, on BBC. I distinctly remember parents of these kids who were up in arms about Jamie Oliver taking away their chips, okay? they went to, when I say chips, by the way, I mean, what do you guys call it? Fries, right? I mean, when I say chips, I mean fries, not crisps, French fries, okay? So you can imagine these children were at school, and the parents went to the school with chips, with fries, bags full of, and they, if you can imagine, they were outside the fence, and they were literally smuggling French fries through the school gates, through the fence, so that their kids could have the slop. Okay, and I remember this being like a nationwide kind of thingy, and most people, including right-wingers, it has to be said, because right-wingers don't like Jamie Oliver because he's left-wing and he's right-on and all the rest of it, were like, oh, how dare Jamie Oliver try to do this? And there were, he faced like a massive backlash, and most people took the side of the parents who were feeding the chips through the thing in the name of liberty or some bullshit, okay? So I guess the reason that that's come to mind is that the extent to which, how can I put this? The people don't want to be saved, Todd. They're going to fight. They're going to fight for the poison. Militantly, they're going to fight for their French fries at the schoolyard or for their porn or whatever else. How do you overcome this?
Well, yeah, they do have a lot of lead in their souls, it looks like. But this is, I think, where the Marxists and other revolutionaries come in handy. So one of the things you'll often hear is, how do you organize the people against capital? Because they haven't seen the alternative yet. They don't know that things could be better in this, quote, socialistic Marxist system. So what they talk about, it's really important for them, is to, or let's make it a more modern example, Islamists like Hezbollah. They provide services to the people in Lebanon that are often associated with the state providing these services. And it's like, here are the tangible benefits for you if you work with us and you follow our project. Now, of course, you know, we can always assume that there's a hidden threat of force behind all this, because it is Hezbollah. But the point is, what is often the case is what people don't like is being dictated at a distance by some unaccountable system without being given reasons or actual reasons, right? Oftentimes, reasons are just things that you say, but they're not really why you're doing it. And we all kind of know you're not doing it for that reason. And it happens a lot with politics or people in media. And we talked about Sadiq Khan a couple weeks ago doing that. So the idea then becomes, well, what if you sat down with these parents, right, one-on-one basis, say, look, okay, this is what the science of biology says about nutrition. This is what's best for your children. And, you know, depending on how they react, they might say, I don't have enough money for that. And like, oh, yeah, that's why the school's doing it, right, because you don't have the money. Rather than just, you know, forcing them at a distance, right? In the Catholic terms, that's called subsidiarity. You deal with it at that level, and then you work your way up. And so part of the problem is a lot of things are done in a way that's not subsidiary related. They just like, we're at the top, do it. You don't have a say in it. You know, it sucks to be you. That's not going to work. We know that's not going to work. But then also, sure, okay, we're just going to budget for the incorrigible. So there's going to be a group of people that just don't want it to happen. But in that regard, I'm kind of agreeing with the 3%ers here. It doesn't really matter. You only need like 3%. I mean, hey, you know, you like your Pareto principle and elite principles. All you need is that 3% AA, and that organized 3% can do this.
Mm-hmm. What? So you just allow most of the population to be fat slobs?
Well, no. What you do is you have a tiered system here, right? You use subsidiarity. You talk to them at their level and be like, "Hey, come on, you got to do this better." But at the same time, you're organizing society around them. They don't have a choice. I mean, think about when the internet revolution hit, right? People didn't have a choice. If you were running businesses without the internet, you're gone. Bye bye. It didn't matter that you didn't want to do it. You just got selected. The system selected against you and got rid of you. And what I'm saying is, one could build such a system that is attempting to do what I think it should do, what Bacon thought it should do, and then it would just select against you. I mean, you wouldn't really be able to do much about it, not much more than you did against the Internet Revolution.
But now people are going to be like, Todd, you're recreating the sinister ERG principles of BlackRock and so on, who try to stealth coerce everybody to eat plant-based burgers and things like this and various other things through this kind of compliance network top down. And this is bad because it's coercive. This is bad because it's, you know, what if people don't want that? You're trying to control people's lives, Todd.
Well, this is where, like, American liberals and conservatives, anarchists and libertarians are all kind of the same. And they don't like to be coerced. But, you know, spoiler alert, you're coerced by the laws of physics, chemistry, and biology every single day of your existence. You're coerced by your biology. That's been a really big problem lately in the modern West. People don't like being coerced by their biology. But I think most of your audience would be like, oh, yeah, we shouldn't let people, though, do that, because their biology really does determine who and what they are. And so what I'm saying is, let's go back to what Philosophy Cat said about Evola in his view of God and orbiting the rod, the axle. Okay. These principles already exist in nature independently of our existence. They operate without our will or consent or support. What I'm saying is that we align ourselves to that, and over the long run, that will be the most efficient way to build a civilization into the future. Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't want to try to, like, I'm just trying to steal my classical liberal ideals here. The point is, though, is that it has to be freely chosen. Okay. So let's take your obese 8-year-old who's 12 stone because his mother's smuggling him chips against the tyrant Jamie Oliver. The point is, they may know that eating that quantity of chips makes you fat. Or they may know that, they may know that choosing these things is wrong, ultimately, taking them further away from God. But the point is, it's their choice. Who are you to say you know better? That's always what it comes down to. Like, who decides? Why are you taking the choice out of that family? Like, how can you, like, by what right do you do this? Etc. Should it not be their own choice whether they eat chips or not? Not yours or Jamie Oliver's or anybody else's.
Well, I would tell that person that those beliefs were programmed by Wall Street. They should go watch Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent. No, nobody wakes up with these values in their head. They're programmed by capitalism. If I went to the steppe in 6th century Scythia, there's no stock exchanges. Nobody thinks like this. Everybody's vitalist and healthy. This is something that is the problem here is that this is not an organic, spontaneous reflection of a human thought. It is something that is manufactured and constructed. And most people don't realize that. And so ultimately, this is a false dilemma. This is not an opinion of somebody who has come to this on their own, but someone who's allowed themselves to be programmed. Even unwillingly in most cases, unawares, but nonetheless, that's what's happened.
See, the reason I'm holding in on this and I'm using this Jamie Oliver example is because it strikes me that when push comes to shove, people actually prepared to fight for this principle. They were actually prepared to fight to do the unhealthy thing in the name of liberty. And I wonder if this is something that people underestimate. Like, let's pretend, I mean, I always thought you could probably have a revolution in Britain in about 5 days. Just cancel the Premier League, stop the football, turn off the TV. BBC One and ITV no longer exist. And there's going to be no more Premier League football. And there's no more Netflix and there's no more porn. I actually think people would be prepared to take arms to fight for these things. Even if the consent has been manufactured, I think they love them so much. Like, there's not going to be any more Disney Plus or Star Wars or any of these things. There's not going to be any more of the slop, right? We take it away. I think people will be out in the street. We're shutting McDonald's down. But McDonald's is banned from this country from now on. You're not allowed to have it. Do you not? I mean, I genuinely think people would be prepared to fight for McDonald's and Netflix and Premier League football.
Well, I'm sure people would be willing to do strange things, but if you make them so unhealthy that they can't get out of their house, that won't happen. That's the dark thing. I'm not saying you should do that, but yeah, right. But again, it's the interesting thing here is that this is probably an unintended consequence of the programming. But the fact that the programming is so powerful and so effective from the point of view of the bourgeoisie who wants to program consumers, this actually proves my point. If this principle of programming were used in the other direction and used in the direction that Bacon is pointing to, we have results that can only be dreamed of. And you know, the longer you do it, the more effective it's going to be. So then the question is, well, what do you do now in the short term before you can set this up? Well, the first thing you have to realize is that the external physical world will be imposing costs on these people such that they will not be able to do what they want to do over a long enough time frame. And so you might just have to wait for them to, you know, go the way of all flesh. But the other thing is, you can also meet them at their level. Again, the principle of subsidiary is very important here, and say, look, okay, you want these goals, right? Let's like a libertarian now. You have these goals you want to achieve, but you're doing things in your own life that get you further and further away from those goals. Maybe you need to sit down and think about what that looks like. And what talking to someone like that, you might be like, well, look, let's say you have three columns, obligations, things you have to do. Second column is things that you do for leisure. And then the third column is you don't know where to put it. You're not sure which one it is. And then you start getting people to compartmentalize what they're doing and saying, well, is this a duty? Do I have to do this? Is this something I'm just doing for fun? Can I give a justification for that? If not, maybe I should stop doing it. You know, and then again, this it's a multifaceted approach. You don't just take one approach to get people to this point. But ultimately, even if you have a maximally dysfunctional state like the modern day UK, physics is still going to step in. It's still going to step in and say, no, you can't do this anymore. You're done. And that will be the ultimate Seldon's dead hand.
You could incentivize it, right? You could say, well, look, you can have your Premiership football. You can have your McDonald's, right? But you've got to earn the right. Let's say, I don't know, you have to do like half hour on an exercise bike and say some prayers or something. I don't know, whatever it is. You set like a bunch of tasks that need to be completed to unlock the right to do the thing. Do you think something like that could work? Again, would people just revolt?
Well, no, I actually think that's a move in the right direction, because even if we want to wean people away from it completely, it may not be feasible to do so in one fell swoop. I mean, think about like someone who's addicted to drugs, you know, and quitting cold turkey in extreme cases might lead to their death. So, you know, you might need to do something like that. But I think what most people don't have but want is there's the system we're living in is super complex, more than any other system in human history. And then second of all, we have people actively lying to us about how the system actually works for their own personal interests and gain. They need to have a sort of a procedural map of how to get ahead in life. And I think what could, of course, be an effective tool in all this is giving them a simple and effective set of instructions that they can apply in their own lives to both improve, you know, their aspect of life, and then also interacting with the broader system. Because if the system that I'm proposing that gets rolled out ends up being simpler, more procedural, less chaotic and confrontational, people will take that, because that's just going to be the better of the two options. It just doesn't exist right now.
You know, I've often thought that this is a structural advantage that Islam has, right? Because Islam is super simple. Here are the rules. Five things you have to do every day, right? Do those things and a few other things. But it's quite prescriptive, right? So it's kind of, I hate to reduce it to this, but it's kind of like plug and play in a way. Whereas many other ethical systems are a bit more, well, they just don't tell people what they need to do, right? I.e., here's the ABC, right? And I wonder if that's actually a technological advantage that Islam has developed over some of the other kind of modern variants of Christianity. I mean, what's the instruction for many? You know, you belong to Methodist Church, say, or Church of England or something. What's the actual instruction? What do you do every day? And it doesn't, like, kind of says, oh, well, kind of, it's up to you how you worship or whatever. Well, maybe that just doesn't work for a lot of people. Maybe people need just to be told. It sounds funny, but I found this when I was teaching, right? When I had students, and like most students just want the ABC. What do you want me to do? What I want you to do is 1, 2, 3. And I'd be the only lecturer who would be like, okay, here's what I want to do. If you want to get a top mark, here's exactly what you need to do, right? Here's how you structure your essay. Here's, here's all the different things. Here's how I mark it. And I make it completely transparent. I show them the actual, you know, and I think they appreciated that because they wanted instruction. But a lot of people would, you know, enlightened types would say, well, that's a bit prescriptive. You're being too prescriptive, they'd say. But most people want prescription, I find.
Well, actually, I think that's a really important insight there. I actually had that problem a lot in college, too. People wouldn't, my professors, just tell me what you want. They would never tell me. And again, society is like that, where in the modern West, we're not told what those in positions of authority above us want. And we're not told how to do things that will yield us predictable results in our own lives to advance our lives. Instead, we're often told the exact opposite, which is why people get stuck, right? And they stay stuck for a very long time. And so ultimately, I think a lot of any psychological resistance to this could be broken down by the fact that we are going to give you tools that will not help you, that will not only help you navigate this current iteration of society we're living in, but a universal tool set based on our understanding of history and philosophy and science to, you know, if you were a time traveler, visited another planet, you would have this default script you could run that would give you predictable, reliable results.
We actually got a little sneak preview of it in this country during COVID, right? Now, a lot of people aren't going to like me saying this, but I did actually see it happen. During COVID, Boris Johnson gave people a daily walk allowance. They're like, for this 1 hour, you're allowed out to have a walk. Go and walk for an hour. And a lot of people, because it was government kind of mandated, because we were living in such a weird moment in that time, took that daily allowance as something that they kind of had to do. So in a paradoxical way, during COVID, many people who would never usually go for a walk took a daily walk for an hour. This was a kind of, like, if you take all of the politics out of it, it was an interesting kind of exercise in, behavior management from the point of view of the administrative state, right? It was like, well, I mean, if I was, like, in the government, I'd be thinking, well, this was interesting because we got millions of people to go for a walk who wouldn't usually go for a walk. How could we, like, what can we learn from that? And how could we nudge them into pro-social behaviors? Trouble is, with our elites, is that that always then ends up going in, you know, unproductive directions like woke and things like that. But, you know, you can imagine, see, this is where there's all these scares about Chinese social credit, whereas actually my understanding is that a lot of the Chinese social credit stuff is geared towards things that you could broadly describe as being pro-social. They're actually of benefit to people. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I actually think that the Chinese social credit system is better than what America has, because what America has is socially, there is an invisible credit system that if you want to get ahead in life, you have to make sure that the other people in your social circle recognize you've done the thing, that they then tell other people you did the thing and that they reward you for doing the thing. In America, people just all the time don't do that. They just actively screw you over. And like, yeah, we know you did the thing, but we're not going to tell anybody about it. Whereas when you actually quantify it and measure it and then have it like published in some government space, nobody's allowed to do that. You can't pretend that it didn't happen. You can't pretend that person didn't do it. And if you do keep doing that, then the government has a recourse to step in. Whereas here in America, you can just hold somebody down in perpetuity and by just constantly lying that he never did the thing, even though you know and everybody else knows he did. And furthermore, you can't quantify it. You know, it's always these, you know, under the table deals, blah, 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 yada, yada. But I think we need to step back here and look at a much deeper problem that this would also address. We don't have an education system anywhere in the world today. Now, if you want to say, Todd, what do you mean? How can you say that? It's crazy. Well, it's simple, right? The basic principle of education is being able to reason from a premise to a conclusion. That used to be taught to everybody in Yale up until 1960-something. And then now, what? The Tribune, yes. Yes. And so nobody anywhere in the world is taught that unless they take specific courses in philosophy, whereas that used to be universally taught to everyone. And so the reason why we have all of these planner snafus is because none of these people actually were learned how to think. The Inca Empire was essentially a planned communist state. It worked, okay? It worked, guys, for like 150 years. So the point is, we have people who don't actually know how to think. So if we talk about planning and organizing and structuring and engineering, well, okay, anything like that, you need to know what the finished product looks like. And as I said, the finished product is turning out adepts like a production line. But the question then becomes, how do you do that? Well, that's where you need to be able to reason. But nobody's taught the trivium anymore. We have this complete failure in education, which is also why people get stuck in life and don't know how to get out. And so what I'm saying, this is going to be a centerpiece of managing the X factor, is telling people, hey, you don't know how to think. It's not your fault, but it's a problem. Here are courses you can take that we're going to offer to you. And then, of course, if that's not enough, you know, you can start putting, you know, pressure at different points, nudging people, so on and so on. But ultimately, we really need to have that come back. And it's just gone. It's hard to conceive that we have a world education system that doesn't have that as a touchstone, but we do.
Well, it's now going to make it really seem like this whole video was a whole nudging exercise to get people to buy my trivia, right? But, I did, you know, make that course from the ground up to address this problem, which is probably why thousands of people have taken it. You know, at one point, every 12-year-old, regardless of level, did this in school. Right. And the trivium that I made was actually reconstructed from Victorian textbooks, a lot of it. You know, and in the case of rhetoric, I was using 18th century textbooks in some cases, because it's just not taught anymore. So, pick up the trivium today. Buy it now. Todd, where can people find you, sir?
They can find me at PLF Podcast on X, and in YouTube search, type in Praise of Phi Podcast.
And speaking of courses, all this week, also mentioning another course, which is available from Eric Kaufman at the University of Buckingham. You can take that online. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And I'll play the video. Todd, it's been very interesting.
Bye-bye.
The ideology of our universities and many other institutions can accurately be described as woke. Woke is not an epithet, but used properly describes the dominant cultural left belief system of Western institutions. Have you ever wondered how woke came about, who believes in it, and why? Or how the culture war between woke and anti-woke forces is redefining society and politics? Well, there's good news. I've developed a 15-week online course on woke at the University of Buckingham, which is open to the global public, the first of its kind in the world. The course is not assessed, but is focused instead on deepening your understanding of woke. I offer a rigorous objective analysis of this phenomenon, similar to the way I would for fascism, communism, or any other ideology. I've studied the cultural left since the mid-1990s, and I'm ideally placed to help you understand woke. Sign up today using the attached link.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.